Welcome to the Old Spanish Trail Spring Lecture Series here at Taos Public Library. My name is Lloyd Rivera, the Voluntary Planner Coordinator. This series is funded by the LEF Foundation of San Rafael, California, by San Francisco. It's a grant which is large enough to provide 10 speakers every Saturday in April and May for an hour here at the Taos Public Library. The overall theme is Native American origins of the Old Spanish Trail. The presenters are speaking on interface topics that pertain to different themes, but they all interact with the theme of the Native American origins of this trail. Originally, Native Americans would walk from village to village, pueblo to pueblo, trade center to trade center. They would walk because they didn't have horses. Well, these trails in their language, especially in northern New Mexico, the term was poe. Poe means trail, it means path. Then in 1829, some traders from Abiquiu Pueblo, they organized an expedition taking 100 mules with woven merchandise strapped to their backs, and this 100 mule caravan was successful. It was led by Antonio Armijo from Abiquiu and 60 mounted horsemen, and it took them about 3 months to reach from northern New Mexico to California. The terrain was difficult, cliffs, steep canyons. It was dangerous. There were landslides. A lot of mules went down cliffs. The heat, the rattlesnakes, dust storms, lack of water, lack of grassy areas for horses and mules. There were raids by bandits. There were raids by the Native American peoples because they knew that they were being invaded by the Spanish, so they had to defend themselves in the territories. So there were hostilities. But like in 1829, Antonio Armijo, who was from Abiquiu, and he was probably Genizaro, that means he was Pueblo Indian, but he knew Spanish and he was Catholic. He was a Genizaro. Anyway, he led an expedition from Abiquiu, and he included trail guides that were Native American. They were Paiute, Navajo, they were Jicari, Apache, they were Ute. And they knew the trade routes. They had their own trails. So they followed the trails that the Native Americans had used for hundreds of years. And so they did reach Los Angeles. And the trail was established to link northern New Mexico and Los Angeles region at San Gabriel Mission. And then about in 1830, General Fremont coined the term of the Old Spanish Trail. Before that, it was called, from California point of view, was called El Camino de Nuevo México, the road to New Mexico. And here in northern Mexico, the term was El Camino de California, the road to California. So then when General Fremont came, he coined the term Old Spanish Trail. So ever since then, it's been known as the Old Spanish Trail. These lectures are free here in Taos at the library. And again, the purpose is to provide information to attendees. The information is usually in English, but at times in Spanish. And these are lead-up lectures in hopes that we could get attendance from the Taos region to go to the 16th National Conference of the Old Spanish Trail at Ignacio, Colorado, at the Scaiute Reservation Hotel. Every year, this annual conference occurs. Last year, it was held at Okiwenge Resort. And this coming year, like I said, in Colorado. It's important that we all participate. It's important that we communicate, that we understand the past, because the past pertains to the present, and the present goes into the future. And we need to understand one another, understand our past history, our commonalities. We also need to understand conflict and past disagreements, because we live in a society that is now characterized by terror, violence, and we need to have communication, and this is one way to create this cultural convergence. The speaker for today is Dr. Jose Rivera. He's my brother. We were raised in the Mora Valley, a little village called Rainsville, originally called Llano del Coyote. Our family moved to Santa Fe. We lived at the Guadalupe Street neighborhood, which happens to be, by coincidence, part of the Barrio Analco, which was a Tlaxcalan village built in about 1598, that Tlaxcaltec Indians accompanied Spanish expeditions to northern New Mexico. The Tlaxcaltecas were warriors, they were fighters, they were farmers, builders, they were planters. Anyway, so we were raised in Santa Fe for 10 years. We went to school at the Guadalupe Elementary School, then Guadalupe Junior High School. Anyway, Jose Rivera has a PhD. He received his BA at Highlands University, his MA in Tucson, University of Arizona. Then he went for a PhD at MIT in Waltham, Massachusetts. He's a professor there at University of New Mexico. He's an executive director of the Center for Regional Studies. His presentation today will pertain to Mesoamerican impact along the Old Spanish Trail, in particular discussions concerning acequias, societies, rituals, penitente associations, acequia culture, farming. He also will be talking about, in particular, to the Sociedad Protectiva Mutual de Trabajadores Unidos, the SPMDTU, which was and is a labor association for residents from northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. This organization was begun about in 1900, and it still exists today. And Aaron Romero from Rancho de Taos has been one of the chief executives. There's also somebody that'll be in the audience today, Carmen Velarde, who was the president of the first Concilio for Women of this association, Concilio Número 20, the 20th Council. And a lot of these persons still live here in the Taos area. This organization was a mutual assistance society, in particular for the working class, the laborers from northern New Mexico, southern Colorado. There's another organization like this. It's located in Santa Fe. It's called the Unión Protectiva, the Protective Union for Laborers, the working class. And that's overall what the presentation will be. So anyway, I present to you Jose.
Good morning. I want to thank the Old Spanish Trail Association members from here and from other communities that you're from, as well as the Taos people and others that came today. I know there are also members of the Sociedad Protección Mutual de Trabajadores Unidos, the SPMDTU, Carmen Velarde, and I believe Hermana Aurora. Sí, Montoya. See, anybody else from the SPMDTU here, maybe they'll be joining us. I know we have other members that live in this area. And I mention that because that is one of the organizations that I'm going to be talking about. You probably saw from the flyer or other announcements that my general topic is rituals and societies. And I decided to subtitle it Acequias, Cofradías y Mutualistas del Río Grande Superior. You don't have to write all of that down because at the end of the presentation, I do have some papers here in the front that you're welcome to take, and then I can always send it to you also electronically if you leave me your email. So much of the text or the narrative that I'm going to present in visual form here will also be available to each of you in this paper. As my brother Lloyd mentioned, I'm a professor at the Center for Regional Studies, the University of New Mexico, and I also teach. That's where I do my research as a research scholar. And then I teach at the School of Architecture and Planning. We have a master's program in community and regional planning. And I generally teach rural community development there, as well as natural resources planning and other courses. Someone just a few minutes ago mentioned a book that I wrote that's apparently here at your library. It's called Acequia Culture. It was published some time ago. It was 1998. It was by the University of New Mexico Press. And that's really what started me on this path or this camino or this road to try and learn more about the culture and history of what I call in my paper El Rio Grande Superior. In this context, superior just means upper, okay? So we're really looking geographically at the upper half of this map in terms of the Rio Grande and the area between, especially El Paso to Santa Fe, San Juan Pueblo, and by extension, of course, to Taos, with the overlap between the Spanish Trail, the old Spanish Trail, and the Camino Real. So I kind of look at this road as a not just a physical place, a highway for traffic and commerce and trade and for exploration, and it was all of those things, of course. But in addition to that, it was also a cultural corridor in the sense of bringing material culture as well as other elements of society from the Central Valley of Mexico, Mesoamerica, if you will, and some of it before that from Iberia in Spain to Mexico and up Mexico by way of the Camino Real, Mexico City, to our own capital, of course, in proximity to the what then was San Juan de los Caballeros, or the Pueblo, and then ultimately relocated, as you know, in 1610 to Santa Fe. And so this is a highway for caravanas, for caravans, and for movement of goods and trade, and bringing settlers, of course, as a primary function was to bring settlers. But I like to look at it in terms also the connection to the resources of the area, clearly water being the fundamental element. And in my view, and I think I have a phrase about that in the paper that I wrote for this lecture, that these were really also caminos de agua, as I call them, basically like water courses or water corridors, because settlement was not possible in this arid, semi-arid landscape in the northern section of this map, both in the northern provinces of what is now Mexico and, of course, the southwestern states in that map as well. Life would not be possible without availability of water. So that was one of the early instructions. Some of you have probably heard that have studied southwestern history or the history of the Americas, really, the laws of the Indies. And those were old Spanish laws from the 16th century that were issued in terms of instructions, really, ordenanzas, or ordinances, to settlers who wanted to settle in the Americas. And the primary instruction was to locate sources of water so that it would make agrarian or agricultural colonies, you know, possible. So in the context of the book that I wrote, the Acequia Culture, that's essentially what I describe as these water colonies and these water societies or hydraulic societies, if you will, because that was the foundation of being able to establish a colony on a land grant or separately from a land grant and sustain life. So in addition to these acequias, which I like to call also irrigation societies, because essentially that's what held the community together. As we probably know, most of these small villages and places in north central New Mexico and parts of southern Colorado are not incorporated, you know, in terms of municipalities, you know, and actually early on there were only a few municipalities here in this Rio Grande Superior or the upper Rio Grande, Santa Fe, Santa Cruz, El Paso, Albuquerque. I think those were the main ones. These other places had to depend on people themselves to form their own local government, and that they did. And the government that they formed was the acequia government, and we see it in operation today. Many acequias right now here and in Nambe and probably other communities in northern New Mexico are conducting one of their annual rituals, probably the most familiar of all the rituals in the acequia culture. And of course, I'm referring to the ditch cleaning, or la limpia de la acequia. You know, this is a time when the users or the irrigators, you know, this society of water users comes together to open up the ditch, to clean it out, get the debris and things that have accumulated during the winter, and of course clean out the bottom, scrape it with shovels and so forth, and excavate it again. And to make water flow once again. So it's a seasonal event early in the spring for that reason. It's a time when people come back together. Maybe they haven't talked a lot during the winter months because of the snow conditions and so on and so forth. And it's a time to then bond, form this bond and of community once more, and you know, become like a ritual of attachment to the place because they care about the ditch and they care about the place where they live. So that's one of the societies that I'm going to talk about in this Camino Real corridor here that got here through this trail. The others are the cofradías religiosas, or sometimes called penitentes, or los hermanos penitentes. Now, for that topic, there's really no need for me to really say a lot about the cofradías because you have them here in throughout Taos County and adjacent counties in southern Colorado, and then, of course, other counties in Rio Riba and Mora and other places in north central New Mexico. There is a book that a friend of mine wrote, and hopefully it's in your library here. It's called A Penitente Renaissance by Ruben Archuleta. It has many maps and photos of the kind that I'm going to show here, but mine are going to be primarily about the acequias and the mutualistas and not so much about the cofradías religiosas or the penitente societies. But that was another important organization. Again, same thing, self-government. I think those of us that have studied penitentes a little bit, we know that they have their own self-government. They still do. They elect their own officers. They elect their own leadership, el hermano mayor. They elect a person that performs charitable works, el enfermero, basically the nurse that takes care of people. They conduct rituals of their own, not only during Holy Week and Lenten season and Good Friday, but at other times of the year. They have prayers. They have alabados. And basically, they operate autonomously. You know, unlike some cofradías in Spain or in Mexico that are more closely tied in with the church hierarchy, one very unique aspect of the hermanos, you know, the penitente hermanos, la hermandad here in New Mexico, is that they're pretty much autonomous in terms of the making of the rules. They do have some relationships and some dialogue with the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, especially since the time of Archbishop Edwin B. Byrne. But before that, they were just totally autonomous. And there was a reason for that. The in this map, for example, you probably see somewhere toward the bottom end, but in the middle and bottom, the city of Durango. Well, Durango was then, at that time, the headquarters of the Catholic Church for New Mexico. You know, and so because that was part of Nueva España, later the Republic of Mexico, and that's where the religious center and direction came from, was from Durango. So this isolation of a couple of centuries of the religious societies here in New Mexico made for this autonomy. As you know, they have their own chapels, the moradas. You know. The other society really was that I'm going to talk about was a sort of evolution of the penitente societies, but a little bit more secular in nature, not as much in terms of religious observations, although they did conduct prayers and ritual ceremonies at funerals and during burials and so forth. And these are called generally in my paper mutualistas. These were mutual aid societies. That again, where they were organized by the people, they elected their own officers, they still do, those that still continue. They established their own rules, just like the cofradías had rules, well, so did the mutualistas. And you all are very fortunate here that you have one of the largest ever societies of mutualistas, the Sociedad Protección Mutua de Trabajadores Unidos. Some of you may know it by its initials, the SPMDTU. Okay. At one time, the SPMDTU had 65 local chapters. Think of them as similar to the local moradas of the cofradías. While the SPMDTU was set up structurally in parallel or very much similarly to the cofradías of penitentes, They had these concilios locales, is what the SPMDTU would call it, and still does. And one of those concilios locales, local councils, is located here in Ranchos de Taos. Is one of the six local council that still survives, that still maintains its organization, and still has its meetings and conducts activities. At one time, from 1984 to 1987, Taos also, Ranchos, was known for having established the first women's council of the SPMDTU, the first and only ever women's council. It was Concilio Número 20. Okay, there was an existing council called Concilio Número 18, you know, council number 18. All of these councils had a number. The number one was in Antonito, Colorado, because that was the headquarters and still is. That's where the parent organization called El Concilio Superior, the Supreme Council, is headquartered, and I have slides of their location. But each of the local councils had a designated number, and the one in Ranchos de Taos was, and still is, number 18. But then the women that were spouses, essentially, of the council number 18, decided in 1984 to start a council, Concilio para las Mujeres, basically a women's council, still under the SPMDTU, in terms of the parent organization in Antonito, but with its own number, and it became known as Concilio Número 20. We happen to have here in our attendance today the president of that first women and only, first ever only Concilio number 20, Hermana Carmen Velarde. Sí. Made history back in 1984 and still is in the history of the organization as the first president of the only women's organization, because what happened was then bylaws were changed. They had actually been changed since, I believe, 1978, that women could belong to the society directly, and they do. The existing council number 18 is made up of both men and women. Okay, we have Aurora, Hermana Aurora Montoya, ¿verdad? And so all of these three societies that I'm speaking about today in terms of this cultural corridor here, all of these are very strong and very visible and have had major presence and still do here in the Taos Valley. I mentioned Acequias, for example. Those of us that study Acequias like I do, we know that the Taos Valley has the largest concentration, the largest number in concentration of Acequias of anywhere in New Mexico. You have about, I'm told, about 80 or so Acequias that are part of the Taos Valley Acequias Association, most of them, okay, if not all of them. Okay, anybody here belong to the TVEAA or to one of the local Acequias? I see. Okay, so the Taos Valley, then, you have the largest concentration. Now, Rio Arriba County is much larger than your county, so they have more Acequias, but they're spread out. As you know, Rio Arriba County is about the size of the state of Connecticut. Okay, but the Taos Valley has the largest concentration of Acequias. And that's for a reason. It's because of these, as I referred to earlier, Caminos del Agua, these water highways, if you will, because it's part of coming along this trail. And then by extension, the old Spanish trail from Santa Fe to Taos on the northern section of it, people were looking for water. And in the Taos Valley, can you irrigate from the Rio Grande right here? Yes or no? You can't irrigate from the Rio Grande, right? Because you can further down at Velarde and Española and other places downstream, you can irrigate by diverting the Rio Grande. Here you can't, you know? So they had to look for the tributaries, and that's what they did. They established settlements along the tributaries to the Rio Grande, and that's where you find these 80 or so acequias. Okay, so with that, let me start a slide presentation here of the various themes that I've already talked about. An interesting historical note is that the The settlement, I'm talking about European settlement, not indigenous communities that were already here before anybody else, that already had established agriculture, such as the Anasazi and the Pueblos that came after them and settled in the Pueblos and up and down the Rio Grande. They were the first irrigators, they were the first agriculturalists. The first European settlers came from Central Valley of Mexico, from Spain to the Central Valley and here. But they brought with them indigenous people from Mexico, and in particular a group of indigenous people called the Tlaxcaltecas. They were from what is now the state of Tlaxcala in Mexico. They formed alliances with the Spanish and came together as basically farmer soldiers in caravans, similar to as depicted here in this drawing, because they were expert agriculturalists and irrigators and farmers themselves. And they were familiar with the northern borderlands in the northern frontiers of Mexico. This is along the Camino Real. This is the cathedral in Zacatecas, cathedral in Durango, which was the headquarters of the religious life of colonial period New Mexico and into the Mexican period up until 1846. This is an older map drawing, really, of El Paso. Again, this is already coming up the Camino Real. And there's a road there that, at least I can read it from here. It says Camino de la Presa y del Nuevo México. Okay, so that is the road that would take you from El Paso Juarez to this next important location. This is a map of Santa Fe in the late 1700s. I believe it's the oldest known map of Santa Fe. And interestingly, there in the box, if you were able to read it, if you were up closer, but I have it cited in the paper that I wrote, it indicates that the southern boundary or the banks of the Rio de Santa Fe, which goes through the middle of the slide, as you can see, there's a colony, basically buildings and dwellings and fields. Those patches of earthwork there are actually irrigated agricultural fields by the use of the other line at the bottom is the acequia para regadío, it's called. And as you can see, there are actually two on this map. One on to the north of the Plaza de Santa Fe. Those darker structures at the top of the map are the cathedral and the Palace of Governors as we know them now. And then the acequia that irrigated the northern part of the Santa Fe Valley, if you will. But there was a southern acequia in the bottom of the slide there that irrigated the, it was called the Barrio de Analco. Okay, that's where the Tlaxcaltecas lived. They built that church, we were told by historians, at the San Miguel Church. Anybody been there? It's called the oldest church in New Mexico. Okay, that was, it's attributed to have been built by the Tlaxcaltecas in Santa Fe, their use as their mission church. And they may have even been responsible for constructing that acequia on the southern bank and maybe helped with the other one too. That we need to study a little bit more. But they basically, this was their place, okay? And part of their responsibility, if you will, was to grow crops for the capital city of Santa Fe. The last part of the Camino Real and the northern extension of the Old Spanish Trail, of course, would end up here in Taos. This is a drawing that Lloyd did and was featured in on a billboard in Albuquerque for about a year or longer.
Okay, it was called the Millennium Trail National Highway Billboard Design Competition. And my entry won.
Yeah, anybody been at
Taos in the Camino Real del Norte?
Interstate 40 Albuquerque near the Rich Ford car dealership? That's where it was. You know, it was very nice. Okay, this part of the PowerPoint then is going to focus on the acequias, and then I'll talk some more about the mutualistas as well. In Iberian countries and Latin American, Ibero-American countries, acequia is kind of like a foreign-sounding term because it is, okay? It's an Arabic-derived term. As we know, the Islamic people We think that the Spanish Mexican people have been here a long time, more than 400 years, we say. Yeah, that is a long time. But the Islamic, Muslim, Arabic people were in southern Spain, Iberia, for 700 years. Okay, so almost twice as long. So you can imagine that the Islamic world and culture, especially in the terms of water technology and irrigation, had a huge impact on Iberia and systems of irrigating that were transplanted here. This is closer by. In fact, I don't know if there's a way we can turn off the lights to the front. We might see the slides a little better now that we're... There we go. Thank you. That's a lot better. Okay. This is a very typical alignment of an acequia and a rio. Remember I mentioned that the Spanish colonial policy was settlers had to look for places to divert water in order to establish a community and establish a government of their own, their acequia government, okay? And so this is very typical. This is the Rio Chama, of course, on the left. It's a wider stream. If you will, it is a stream, and then the one of the acequias that is diverted from the Rio Chama. The road had just recently been bladed, so it gives you this nice look, you know, in contrast of a river and an acequia alongside. The word Spanish is a transcription, as we say, of an Arabic word meaning irrigation and irrigation canal, and the meaning is the same. These are like typically in the traditional uses are left as open ditches, sometimes called zanjas, and acequias, of course, and that means that they're earthen, okay? And so the traditional acequias in New Mexico are still earthen canals. Some are concrete lined and cemented, as we know, but many of the older ones are still earthen. This is sort of like the cultural monument, really, worldwide, not just in the in Iberia and in desert parts of Mexico and Baja California, the Southwest, but also Peru and other countries that are arid and semi-arid in climate. And water being the driver, this is what this wheel sort of represents, that you put water on the land and it's going to transform that landscape. These diversions were called in Spanish tomas de agua, and I like that phrase because it gives the sort of life version of it. Basically, it comes from the verb tomar. We all talk about that in Spanish, tomar agua, you know, to drink water. And so this is sort of like drinking water, basically, for the community, taking water from the river to sustain life. You probably have heard the phrase, you see it around many places, water is the lifeblood of community. Or as we would say in Spanish, sin agua la tierra no vale nada. Without water, land is of no value. La tierra es la madre y el agua es su sangre. You know, the dirt or the earth is the mother, and then water is the lifeblood, essentially. Okay, this is a traditional brush rock dam, or of course here it would be a presa, you know. This is on the Pecos River, and it gives you the idea of how these were constructed in the old days. Many of these still exist. This one happens to be concrete, block now, and a modern dam on the Pecos, but there are still some that look like this, just using boulders and twigs and trunks of trees to elevate the water enough to divert it into the acequia madre. The canal on the bottom right-hand corner of the slide is, of course, the beginning of the acequia madre for this particular community. I like the way they were described in the early Spanish laws of New Mexico, already a territory after 1848, and the laws of 1850 were really the first water laws of New Mexico. A lot of the lawyers or engineers in Santa Fe tell us, well, the first water laws were the Water Code of 1907. Well, they're talking about the territorial period of U.S. jurisdiction. And true, that was the Water Code of 1907 when the Office of State Engineer was created. But the first laws were actually the Leyes de las Acequias. I mean, that's what they were called. And they were published like that by the New Mexico Territorial Assembly in 1850-51. and they were called Acequias de Común. And it gives you that idea of community again, this society of irrigators. This is the ritual that's going on today. I think at Hermano Steve Trujillo and others from here from the Taos Valley are cleaning some of the acequias. I know Hermano Frank Lopez from Nambe, from the SPMDTU there, Concilio de Nambe, número 57, was not able to be here because they're cleaning their acequias. So we have some people missing today. But that's the ritual. Annual, the attachment and the sense of place. Once water is diverted off of these, these presas, then it defines the landscape, basically. This is one of my favorite because it shows you very clearly the contrast between the surrounding sort of desert and semi-desert natural forms, features. This happens to be an embudo. But those are typical vegetation shrubs, that you find here in the Taos Valley as well. And this is after the ditch has been cleaned. This is probably a few years ago. And water finally comes down the canal again. And as you know, it's in a pretty hilly area there. But that's for a reason. These acequias we know, and those of you live here, so you know this, as well and better than most people. They depend on gravity flow. There's no fossil fuels that are used. There's no pumping that is involved. There's no energy that is depleted or consumed, other than just natural forces of energy, basically gravity flow. And that's why they have to be higher to then be able to move the water and take it to where you want to irrigate in the valley. There are many values that are associated with acequias, cultural, natural, social, and economic, and here are some of them. We can look at it that there's the physical side and then there's the intangible or the cultural elements. The physical side, of course, is to irrigate land for growing of crops. And this physical infrastructure, if you will, includes terms that are familiar to all of us in English as well as in Spanish. Presas, the diversion dams, compuertas, head gates. And here's an example of another presa. Now, unlike the one in the Rio Pecos, this one still exists, exactly the way you see it there. This is a traditional dam, a traditional presa in the Rio Gemes. And again, it's made out of logs and boulders and rocks and laid down at the bed of the river in order to elevate the water to then turn it into the head gate in the Acequia Madre. This is a different kind of presa. This is high up in the mountains in Mora, actually in Tres Ritos, off of one of the tributaries to the Rio Pueblo there. And it actually is a trans-mountain ditch. It takes water from this tiny stream creek here and diverts it over to the Mora River. So you can say, and it is physically true, that just with earthen canals and the use of gravity and following the landscape and the contours of the land, this ditch takes water that normally, see the water on the left bottom of the screen there, that normally would end up here in the Rio Grande, further down at Embudo is where it would end up, where the Embudo meets the Rio Grande. Well, because of this simple diversion, it's made up of more modern material and metal, as you can see. But because of that, that water now goes to the Mora River and eventually to the Canadian and into the Mississippi. So it's a transbasin acequia. It was engineered by hand in the late 1880s. Other structures are tanques. And again, Taos Valley is blessed for many reasons. This is one of the reasons you have tanques here. The one I know firsthand is where Lloyd and my sister-in-law Grace live at Talpa, the tanque at Talpa. Who's been at that tanque? And what's across the street from that tanque?
A morada.
A penitente morada. So here you see the culture, two societies existing side by side, a society of irrigators using that tanque to water their fields in Talpa, and then the religious societies using the morada as their ritual chapel and sacred space. Other structures are the partidores and the canoas. There's a more modern partidor. It's basically to divide water. This is up near near Valdez, here in Taos County also. and it divides water into two acequias up at Acequia de la Cuchilla, it's called, and it provides water to Des Montes and to the Acequia de Rebalse. This is a canoa. Now, these are disappearing, so if ever you see one, take a photo of one, because they may not be there 10 years from now. This one does exist, but it exists because it's being preserved. It's being preserved at the Rancho de las Golondrinas in La Cienega, south of Santa Fe, that living museum that's there. They, in fact, have one of your molinos, the molino, this grist mill that used to grind wheat, part of the acequia. We'll see some photos. The one that was at Talpa is now at Rancho de Golondrinas. The one that was Truchas is now at Golondrinas. The one that was at Trampas is now at the Cassidy Roller Mill over there. Have you seen that, the structure next to the, it's not the large molino, the small one, made out of logs. Yeah, okay, I'll show you what they look like. Okay. So that's part of the acequia. So these local materials, again, being used to move water, keep it going under gravity flow conditions. Then, of course, the Acequia Madre, that's in Colorado, the sangrias that enter the farmers' fields. So, and at some locations, these traditional grist mills. Every village in New Mexico had one, and sometimes two. So I'm told that people who have studied these and documented some archaeological research, that there were about, 250 or 275 of these molinos. And this is what they look like, most of them. This is the one that was in Truchas and relocated to the Rancho de Golondrinas to preserve it. It's the only still functioning and operating grist mill of an acequia, system. And they do this only once a year when they grind wheat there as a demonstration. But you can see it at any time that the museum is open. Those are the original parts. There's a family here, the Gus Cordova family in Vadito. I believe he used to be your county manager or city manager. Anybody know Gus Cordova? No. His family still has one on the family property in Vadito. And it has the parts in it too. And I believe it is operating. They don't use it commercially, but for family and demonstration reasons. And the one in Cassidy Mill, that's what it would look like, that structure. That one's from from Trampas. Okay, so there are also landscape values, what I call in the material that I write, paisaje de la acequia. And this is just basically means the landscape associated with these irrigation canals. But it also includes the physical architecture and the street layout and housing. This is La Cienega. Cienega Creek runs down the middle where you see those cottonwoods in the fall. If it weren't for the creek and the acequias, these cottonwoods wouldn't be there. This would be desert. And they run alongside the street because there's a paved road there, so they kind of have to move it over a bit. This is the Acequia Madre at La Cienega. There's churches that are associated with these sites. This happens to be the church San Isidro. You have your own San Isidro here in Los Cordovas that they have a ritual, a procession, a mass, and they go out and bless the fields and shrines and so forth that Celia Rodriguez has very well eloquently written about in her book on acequia and water sharing. This is another San Isidro. This was in Corrales. This is another chapel. This is in El Guique. Anybody know where El Guique is? Where's El Guique?
By
Española. By Española. See, you know where it is, too.
Sort of a road between Okeahuinge and Leiden.
That's correct. Yeah, it's the road that parallels the Rio Grande on the western side of the Rio Grande, right? Yeah, near Chamita to El Guique. Okay. I call it the smallest church in New Mexico because I'm told by the people there that only 15 persons can fit there on Sunday, so you better get there early, Carmen, if you're going to go there. and it's another relationship between, religious societies and irrigation culture and society, because the church has the same name as the acequia. They're both named after San Rafael. Okay, so the acequia de San Rafael del Guique and La Capilla de San Rafael del Guique or something like that. They have the same name. Other landscapes are, of course, built materials like corrales, sheds, and barns. I believe this is here in Talpa, I believe. Anybody seen that corral? It's near your house. Then, of course, moradas. Now, this one everybody's seen. Where is that?
In Talpa.
Yeah, okay. So that's next to that tanque, the Talpas. Again, a connection between the two societies. So in general, we call this a Seca culture in terms of its economic value. Well, what value does this have to everybody, to the whole state of New Mexico? And I claim in the material that I've written that this makes an economic contribution to the state, because that's one of the reasons, because of these landscapes, that we call this place the land of enchantment. And that's how we market, you know, our state, you know, in tourist magazines, national and internationally. And that's what people come to see. They come to see Truchas. They come to see Talpa and Ranchos. And they come to see Peñasco and Mora and so forth. Now, intangible elements are harder to identify, but certainly one very important one is the transmission of local knowledge. You know, there's a lot of skill to irrigating on these earthen canals, because all you have basically is a shovel, okay? And so you have to, move the water, getting that into the canal, really, and transporting it in the Seca Madre is the easy part. The harder part is moving it in your own field, as this irrigator is doing. I think it's in the late 1940s. And he's showing the kids, how to move the water, with the shovel. There's a knowledge base also in terms of even like cleaning the ditch. This is another location. I believe this is El Cerrito. And people taking turns, just cleaning out their section. What is each section of the ditch called as it's cleaned out? What do you call it here in Taos? Huh? Tarea. Yes. Hermano Abron. Yeah. Yeah, he would know. He's cleaned out several tareas. Lloyd has two in our grandfather's acequia in Moore County. Tarea, see.
They keep moving.
It keeps moving like a leapfrog, like a chain gang, kind of. You're given that stretch. That stretch, you can see freshly dug out by this first person here, parciate, as they're called in Spanish. You can see that's freshly dug out. It's the length of that stick that the mayordomo has. So the person on the top, of course, would be the mayordomo and rayador. He's performing that function too. He's marking off the tareas that everybody has to clean. They provide many ecological services too, because the acequias extend the riparian area, the biodiversity of plants, trees, vegetation, wildlife that survives on those shrubs and corridors. This happens to be Valdez. You probably have seen this. Cottonwoods marking off the perimeters. This is near Abiquiu. Those cottonwoods would not survive if it weren't for the fact they're drinking water from that acequia that goes around this pasture. This is another tanque. This is in Placitas near Albuquerque, but it gives you the idea of the preservation of biodiversity and creating this sort of like these mirrors, really. Returning water by way of flood irrigation. This is in Velarde. That water, after it seeps into the ground, guess what it does? It recharges the aquifer and it goes back into the river also. So it has return flow values. There's another ditch cleaning that we've seen. There are religious activities associated with the cleaning of the ditch and blessing of the fields and ditches during especially the patron saint days, like in San Isidro at Los Cordobas. And
Dia de San Isidro.
Dia de San Isidro.
May the 15th.
May the 15th, so it's coming up. Okay.
Other kind of rituals. This is it.
Matachines. You have matachines. You have everything here in Taos. This is the center of the culture in many ways.
Here you have matachines, but these are at San Antonio de Padua. It's the church in between Cedar Crest and Tijeras on the eastern mountains of the Sandias near Albuquerque. They go out, they have a mass and a procession, just like you do at Dia de San Isidro here, Los Ordovas, and they go up and they have musicians and the matachines, and they go up and bless the spring source. This is an ojito. This is not a stream, but it's an ojito. So that's La Cienega, a particularly striking photo of how water transforms basically a desert, you know, a desert kind of environment into, in effect, this little oasis here. We attended a conference in southern Spain one time, and that's what the conference was about, that many desert areas of the world, in North Africa and the Middle East, and Baja California, Mexico for sure, but even our places here being semi-arid, water is what transforms the landscape into a, you know, an oasis. This next group of slides are from another society. This one is the one I mentioned at the start, the SPMDTU, Sociedad de Protección de Trabajadores Unidos. By now we have another member who has joined us this morning, our Mariscal Superior Officer, Auron Romero. You all know him back over there. Okay. And anybody else from SPMDTU that has joined us since we started? So these slides then are of this particular organization. It was founded, and it's depicted here in the front of this building in 1900. This is the parent organization of all the local concilios. All the local chapters are headquartered in this particular facility in Antonito, and it's called, as it's described there, the Concilio Superior. And it was built in 1925, but the organization was started in 1900. This next slide is the same building, but it gives you the side view. And so there's some murals. And if you notice, the mural here toward the front of the building, it depicts an agricultural scene. So it is reflecting and recognizing the history of the San Luis Valley, just like here, was based on these water colonies, you know, these agricultural communities. And that was what made settlement possible. There happens to be a book written about the SPMDTU, se llama La Historia de la Sociedad Protección Mutua de Trabajadores Unidos, by a member, a former, he's deceased now, but our former hermano José Timoteo López. And I say hermano because I'm a member as well. Okay. And just like the penitentes call each other hermanas, hermanos, okay, well, so do the members of the mutualistas and the SPM. Okay, so there were women's auxiliaries. This was the one of them, La Sociedad AMB. It was basically a mutua benefit organization for women. But it was not within the SPMDTU. It was a separate auxiliary, but they were related. So I wanted to point that out because the only concilio that was a concilio of the SPMDTU was number 20 here, as I mentioned at the start. This was their devisa of the ladies' auxiliary. And then we'll have some other ones coming up. The SPMDTU is very well known for its local concilios. Now, as I mentioned, they're not all operating. There used to be 65 councils, you know, throughout Northern New Mexico, actually all the way down to Las Cruces, okay, and also Southern Colorado, and three in Utah, and then one concilio in Denver. So currently the ones that we have are in Denver, Antonito, Alamosa, Ranchos de Taos, Nambe, and El Rito, okay. This is Ojo Caliente. There used to be a local council there. That was their building. That was the logo. This is very typical, the stretching out, the helping, the caring for people. This is another concilio in Chama, Colorado. We have a Chama in New Mexico. Well, there's a Chama in Colorado. And this was a former hermano Juan Olivas. This is the Nambe. These are six former presidents. And then in the next slide, we'll be able to see the building itself, the SPMDTU of Nambe. What's this one? This is not a concilio, but it's something very familiar. Yeah, this is the St. Francis Church. But I say it just to immediately get your attention because this is where the Concilio Número 18 is. today. I don't have a front photo. I need to get one, and maybe if some of you have one. But that's looking down the hill toward the Consiglio Numero 18, okay, that building. And this is a better look at it because this is the inside. I'll leave that on for a minute or so. And maybe some of you can tell me who is featured in this photo. This is the Rancho de Taos Consiglio.
Okay, this is Carmen Velarde. She's seated right there. This is Aurora Montoya, right? Right over there.
Fernández Trujillo.
Okay.
Fernández Trujillo is the next one to Aurora.
Can I let me point real quick? Is this Juan de Vargas?
Juan de Vargas. My husband's in the back.
Ernesto.
Yeah.
Carmen.
Tony Romero.
Tony Romero.
Leonardo Valerio.
And that one?
Nelson González. Fernández Trujillo. Onofre Mondragón. No. Which one? That's Nelson González. Yeah, that's Nelson González.
And González?
The other one, the one in the back is
Adonio Pacheco.
Oh, yeah.
She was the vice president. Yes. Carmen was the president.
No, she wasn't.
Of the number 20. Anyway.
Was.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And who's this?
And Onofre Mondragón. And Ruben Aurora Montoya. Ruben Trujillo. Juan José Griego.
So you have a lot of famous people here. So we'll go on to the next slide. This is the founder, very important, okay? The founder of the SBMDTU, Señor Don Celedonio Mondragón.
Celedonio Mondragón.
He was originally from Antonito area, Cenicero specifically. He moved to Santa Fe as a young adult and started a jewelry making business there. He traveled throughout north central New Mexico, places like Las Vegas, and he decided to come back home to Antonito and start a mutualista society because they were very popular in those days as a way of people taking care of their own. This is before, 1900 was before welfare, before public assistance, before food stamps, before commodities, before any kind of government relief. There wasn't any. In 1900 and before.
Huh? Before any sheriffs.
Yeah. So.
Before Walmart.
The members, you know, some of the older members that we saw in those slides that we have interviewed for this project, because we're writing a new book about the SBMDTU. That one that you saw was published in 1958, and we're writing an updated version of it now. And the older members tell me that they have this great respect and honor for Don Celedonio Mondragón because it was his idea for people to unite, basically to take care of their own.
Yes.
There was nobody else. Because in these villages, there was no government, even county government. Okay, that was distant. And people in the local villages had to take care of their own. They conducted their own ceremonies, their own burials especially. These began in large part kind of following the penitente tradition of helping widows and children and helping with funeral costs and arrangements, the velorios, you know, the prayers and the ceremonies, and paying for the caskets if the family could not afford one. Making them, hand-making. There was a carpenter here in Taos that made them. Okay, so this is the Consiglio Legislativo 1938. Goes to show you how large this organization was. They had between 2,000 and 3,000 members. And that was just their legislative council. These are the members who made the laws. So again, another type of self-government, just like acequias were self-governing, well, so is the SBM to this day. They have a cuerpo legislativo, and they have the Consiglio Superior. Okay. This is a gravesite of one of the deceased members. Perfecto Bueno, 1890 to 1932, and it says at the bottom, he was beloved by God and man. And there's the SPMDTU symbol of friendship, of hermandad, or brotherhood, help of helping. This is the same idea depicted in one of the older pins. And in the devisas, this happens to be one of the older ones. And then you hear, see side by side, some of the women's ribbons alongside the men's. And Hermana Carmen Velarde has hers pinned on her clothing today. This was part of the ceremony. They would wear these ribbons and these sashes, you know, especially at conventions. This is at one of the conventions. And you can tell this great sense of pride of this is ownership. You know, they own and they run this organization. It's their space, their time, it's their democracy. Yeah, this one really gets to the heart because this member, Hermano Tomás Romero, was a secretary treasurer for about 35 years, from about 1969 till he passed away in 2005. Okay, and that he was really the one that kept all the records together. This also, Hermano is very important in the history. Hermano Ezequiel Salazar, he was president for, I don't know, maybe 20 years total. I mean, you know, many of you that were members probably remember. He still survives. He is a member of the Concilio at Nambe, Concilio number 57. And these were some of the women that were starting to join the organization directly. And I believe all four of them are still members of the Nambe Concilio. This is El Rito. You know, I mentioned that there's a concilio there. It's still there. And this is where they have their meetings. And these are father and son. Very nice. Okay, two generations. And actually, many of these members have been in the SPM for four generations. Okay, this is an old-time photo. Hermano Aron, is this maybe the inside of the concilio?
Yes.
Creo que sí, ¿no?
Yeah.
Aquí en Rancho de Taos? Sí, yeah. The reason I ask is because you can see that it's a fairly good-sized group. Of course, you had at one time probably about 100 members. And this would fit that, but there are others from other concilios here. Hermano Tomás is there at the bottom right, and then Presidente Superior Ezequiel Salazar is at the middle of the photo at the bottom. And so apparently this is a meeting where other councils came to your meeting, which was very common in those days. Okay, this is a more recent group photo. This is the inside of that big building, the Concilio Superior in Antonito, the headquarters building. And they had another kind of, I don't know, regional meeting or Concilio Superior meeting in that day. In the year 2000 was the 100th anniversary. Okay, as we mentioned, it was started in 1900. So in the year 2000, the organization had its centennial celebration. So they had these T-shirts made. And in the back it said, Guardiantes de Cultura, basically guardians of the culture, keepers of the culture. And this is the celebration part of it that day in Antonito. I was not a member yet at that time. And that was their meeting hall, their stage. At the front of the stage and right in front of this mural and stage there, very important, that statue was commissioned. That's a statue, a bronze statue sculpture of the founder, Celedonio Mondragon. Okay, and it was commissioned by the officers of the Concilio Superior to honor and recognize them, and that sculpture statue is now next to the building on the south side of the building. That was the only surviving daughter of the founder at that time. She came to receive the statue on behalf of the family. This is an old record book. And it looks all tattered and so forth, but these records have been kept since the early 1900s, and they were stored there at Concilio Superior. So in the wisdom of the officers at that time, they decided to preserve them in an archive at the University of New Mexico, and that's where they are now.
Yeah.
This is very recent. This is the last convention that we had. Did somebody from Denver come finally? Somebody, Vicky Ferresquez, was going to come,
she
if she could.
She was going to, started snowing.
Started snowing, okay, yeah. Because now the president of the Denver Concilio is a woman. So she's the second woman president after Carmen, Hermana Carmen here, Vicky Velasquez, Frescas. So anyway, this is the Denver Concilio. They have their meetings. Okay, they were preparing for the convention. This is part of the convention. Then there's, this is an initiation. We were trying to recruit new members. And we could stop here a minute. Who's this gentleman here on the left? Anybody reckon?
Steve.
He's a member of the SBMDTU. Okay. His wife joined that day, Diana. Okay. And then my wife, Trini, is here. She joined. And then the other new member was from Denver. This is when they're taking sort of like the initiation. So this is like a ritual of becoming a member. And then we only have a couple of more. They had a very nice exhibits of basically paraphernalia and memorabilia and so forth. I didn't know, for example, that the SBMDTU at one time had these hats, you know, like the American Legion, you know, members have. And that was really neat from Alamosa in that case. And some of their booklets, their Código Ritualístico, that's their code of rituals. You know, they have their prayers there and their ceremonies for opening and closing meetings and their ceremonies at burial sites and how to pay last respects. There's a close-up of that hat. And then these sashes that they wear at the conventions, just beautiful. Each officer has one. And we're closing with this one because this is our own local hero, Hermano Abrón Romero from Ranchos de Taos. He is currently, he was at course at this Denver convention, and I was there too, and we took this photo to recognize him as the Mariscal Superior, correct, is your title. So he's like the superior marshal, you know, or superior sergeant at arms, you know, for the society and the officers. So let's give him a okay, so any, those are the end of the slides. Any questions, any comments? Yes. One reason is there are about 1,000 total acequias in New Mexico and southern Colorado, so we haven't done a complete, the state engineer has a list, but only of about 750. So we need to do more studies of the ditches and locate them, so maybe you can write that one down and I'll see what I can find out about it.
Get permission. I'm going to ask and get permission to bring out the old Buffalo Road and the Elk Heights that have the symbols going out to the medicine wheel. Because I've been from the same camp, runs through the old paddy trail going on way on into Colorado over by Hamden, Brooks Hamden, Little Tentingwood, and I'm down through Northwest Jefferson.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, we need more for all of these. Every acequia, I tell my friends at UNM, I've never met an acequia that I don't like. Because they're all fascinating. They have their own, and there's a reason for it. They're all unique. They have to be built out of the earth, of the landscape. So the landscape is different from here to there in this valley and the other one. So they're all going to be unique because they have to move water according to the contours. And so they're all different.
We talk about this and show the golden age traditionally. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Yeah, if you could help us with that, yeah. By the way, I also talk about ASICAs as people's institutions. Basically, they're like water democracies at work, you know. And that's something we need to recognize and value here. Any other comments and questions? Yes.
What's the difference between the work that the Concilio does and the...
Cofradías Penitentes? Yeah. Very similar. Very similar. They both take care of the sick, the elderly, prepare meals. They chop wood for the elderly. They go visit people at hospitals. And they conduct funeral rites and services. They're identical in that sense. The Cofradías de Penitentes have more religious purpose to them in terms of Holy Week and Good Friday and many more prayers. But there's a great parallel. It's structurally also. And they both are hermanos. That's the word that they use to each other. They're kind of like the same tradition. Mm-hmm.
They were also very patriotic.
Mm-hmm.
Before World War II, when the war started, some of the older SPMDTU members went around telling the boys to register
mm-hmm.
and go voluntary into the service.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
They were very, very patriotic. Besides being very religious.
Yes, those conventions, I don't know how much we saw it in there, but yeah, all the conventions have the three flags, the flag of the United States, the flag of the state, either Colorado or New Mexico, depending on where they can, and then the flag of the SPMDTU, their banner. Okay, so any other comments, questions? Yes.
Warren, I
think. Who was first? I'm not sure.
Go ahead, sir.
You talked about them making a lot of laws. Now, are these like civil laws?
No, just their own
just
rules.
Just their own rules,
yeah.
And regulations.
Yeah, rules of how to distribute the water, how to share the water, rules for how to conduct meetings. Just their local...
Their own communities only.
Yeah.
But not to...
Not for anybody else, just for their own members.
Okay.
Yes. Si, senor.
Oh, I just wanted to say I grew up in San Antonito, and the photos were nice to see of that little church. In San Antonio near Sandia.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to point out that not 2 years ago, I think it was 2000, the little Malinche was a Anglo girl. And so assimilation can work both ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And these societies are one of those ways. My grandfather was a Mason and a hermano,
mm-hmm.
and a morada.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was all mixed up.
Well, that's good.
But this is why I think that some of these things are very important, because there were I don't see that there were any barriers to admission except for where you lived and what you cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an ethic that the Tauceños should participate in.
I call the Asequias in particular the great social equalizers, because on that day like today, cleaning out your ditches here, you'll see teachers, you'll see lawyers, you'll see bankers. You'll see bus drivers, you'll see just a whole range of occupations on that day. And they're all, today they're all the same thing, they're peones. You know, and in English it sounds like peon, right? But but in the Sequia culture, it's an honor to clean the ditch as a peon, you know. And your subordinate to the boss that day is the mayordomo. There's only one boss. And that's the superintendent of the ditch known as the mayordomo. Anybody here been a mayordomo or is? Yeah, okay.
I was a mayordomo 5 years in St. Francis Church.
Of the church, yeah,
the church.
Okay. What about, the churches have mayordomos too. There's another parallel. And the acequias have mayordomos. Hermano Abron, you've been a mayordomo or you are now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Si, sí. Okay.
Yeah.
One more question, then I'll leave it to somebody else. One question. The old overview of Imora, Cleveland,
yes.
To...
Yes, it's connected to all Molino from Trampas is located there. It's and they have the commercial size Molino used to grind wheat for Fort Union at that time, but that's now a operating museum. If you're in Cleveland, stop by. It's run by the Cassidy family, and we have one of the Cassidys here today.
Right.
What's your first name again?
Vivian.
Yeah, okay. So that's been a long time Irish family who settled in the Mora Valley, and they operate that Molino there. Yes?
And the other mill going up towards, you know, Packer Ranch?
St. Vrain Mill.
Yeah, that's St. Vrain Molino. That was another one. And by the way, the first electric power in the Mora Valley was produced by a Molino on the Maestas property, right? Yeah. That was the history of that one. Hermana?
My mother-in-law's father has the Molino still standing. It's not workable, mm-hmm. but it's Inocencio Duran Molino in that road where I live, the same Cordillera Road.
Over there? Oh, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and there was another one in Talpa, Leandro Duran.
Mm-hmm. So you have some Duranes in your family? Are there Duranes in your family?
Leandro Duran was the one in Talpa. He's not related, okay. but Inocencio
yeah.
Duran
yeah.
was my husband's grandfather.
Oh, okay.
And he's the one that has the Molino. It's still standing. It's still the same yeah. way it was.
Good. Yeah, well, save it, of course. Yeah. Okay, I know Lloyd has to do a project here, but I wanted to mention that the papers, if anybody would like a copy of the paper that I spoke about today, you're welcome to take these. They're up here in front for you. Or if you want to receive it by email, attachment, you know, electronically, give me your email and I will do that.
Okay, okay. Okay, the theme for this series that we're having is there's diverse topics, diverse presenters, but the overlying theme for this grant, the title was Native American Origins of the Old Spanish Trail. So each of the speakers that we have speaks on a different topic, but they all interface. And that's what we wanted to do here, to bring in speakers that are from community, that are PhDs, that are local, that are different cultures. And the next speaker next week will be Jerry Padilla. He's a historian. He works for the Taos News. And then following that, we have Ron Reinekainen. He's seated right over there. He works here at the library. And then we have me. And then the following week, Paul Martinez. And then Rich Sanders. He's right back there with the black cowboy hat. He's going to be a presenter as well. And then Warren Kelly right here is a presenter. And you're all welcome to come. At this moment, I'd like to present to you Mark Henderson. Come to the front. He's my very good friend. And he developed the evaluation form that will be passed out to you because we want you all to sign in some information. Yes, I do. I have them. Yeah. Yeah. I've been a member of this association since 2006. You should join. It's only $25, and it's excellent. There's going to be a national conference at Ignacio, Colorado, the first weekend of June, and it's the 16th National Conference. It'll be held at the Sky Ute Resort Hotel. I encourage you all to join the association and attend. Do you have anything to say? Let me go get the forms. But you would
okay.
Impromptu.
How long is it going to take you to get the forms? Because I don't want to hold people.
Oh, they're right there. Right
there. Oh, okay. Please fill out an evaluation form, and if you're interested, please include your email address or a telephone number. We're trying to start a chapter of the Old Spanish Trail Association here in the northern part of the state. There is an existing chapter in Santa Fe, and their annual meeting is in 2 hours, and I'm obligated to be there. So hopefully those of you who are not members of the Old Spanish Trail Association will be interested in joining the association, even if you're not interested in a chapter here locally. Because one of the things, if you like this series of programs, one of the things that we'll be able to do if we get some more membership is we'll be able to continue this type of program in the future. We're hoping that we'll, if our chapter creation is a success, that we'll be able to get a charter for the chapter at the national convention. We're working on bylaws. If you get an email address on the evaluation form and would like to get more information about the development of the local chapter or the Old Spanish Trail Association in general, I'll try to put you on an email distribution list. Any questions about Old Spanish Trail Association? Okay, thank you very much for your patience. Please fill out an evaluation.